Long-winded podcast. That's what I get a lot of these days. But you know, they say anything long-winded means you got good pipes. Well, not pipes, plural, because we only have one pipe, you know, figuratively speaking. But it's weird how you have a pipe to enter a thing when it's all pipes. Basically, this whole life is just full of pipes. And it's all pipes, Jerry. But let me tell you what is not pipes. Income is not piping hot right now. It's pretty cold. Cold winter. As they say when these alpha males talk about the gals, they say it's winter out there for them, so they're having a hard time, you know, finding the men they want. And all I can say to that is, seems like they're getting a bunch of men, you know. The question is, are they getting the type of man like me? What's so special about you, Clint? What's your talent? Well, glad you asked. Did you know that I can actually hold 7 pickles on 7 fingers and balance it all? Talk about a big deal. And I am known for not cramping up, but I will cramp your style, Mr. Krampus, when it is the winter time. See how it all comes together? You may be shivering, but as Drake would say, I'm so hot, but something about Canada, and I'm so cold, but I'm never shivering. So, I forgot the line. But you know what? We all forget lyrics to Drake songs, right? But yeah. Anyways, so, have you ever been questioned? Do you look your age? Right? The age old question, ironically. I guess it is the age old question, literally. Do you look your age? Right? We all want to look younger than our age. But in some ways, it's weird how everyone wants to look younger, but yet we seek maturity. We seek someone who's been through, you know, life. We want someone with life experience, but we all want to look younger than someone who has that life experience, which is kind of a weird dynamic. Which I get it, you know. Typically, men aren't attracted to anything over the age of 20 these days. And it's like the expectations is, hey, I need you to be 23, making 120K, and, you know, have no faults. And you're just like, I still eat no sugar. I still eat ketchup, and I've even upgraded to the no sugar ketchup, which I don't know what's with this big deal of no sugar ketchup. Like, you really think at that point it really fucking matters? Like, the least of my worries is if I have ketchup in my sugar. Like, I feel like if ketchup is the main thing you have that has sugar in it, I think you're doing pretty well. And then these dumbass, you know, I've come across these things in my algorithm. I don't know what podcast it is, but it's clips from these two women. I think one's like British and one's Australian. And it's like this such serious, like 1v1, like modern wisdom for woman version. And it's like this health expert about the comparisons of whole milk, almond milk, blah, blah, blah. And trying to say that, oh, you know, neither is good for you. Coke Zero is not good for you. Coke isn't good for you. And aspartame will have issues with potentially cancer and all these different things, but the 25 grams of added sugar in your Coca-Cola is like, okay, but here's the difference. And here's where my argument for drinking regular soda is typically better for you than Coke Zero and stuff. Because you will feel the shitty effects of drinking Coke with that extra grams of added sugar. Where if you're drinking these Coke Zeros, these Diet Cokes, where no calories, it's like, yeah, I know it has this, but, you know, so I can drink 6 or 7 of these a day. You are compounding that aspartame, those bad chemicals, 6 or 7 times more likely than if you just drink one can of Coke that's not good for you and you feel like shit. And that's what might change your habits. When you feel the effects of all that shit. So, I don't know. Just a thought. We try to mask these bad effects of things. And we just kind of, oh, but is it, we're putting a Band-Aid on really the bigger issue, which is our relationship with food, our relationship with, if we put branding, or if we say, hey, this isn't as bad. In one area, it's not, but when you now multiply this less bad thing, now you have, like, let's say the scale of drinking regular Coke on 1 to 10, 10 being the worst. Let's say drinking a can of Coke's like an 8. And let's say drinking a Coke Zero is like a 4, okay? So drinking Coke Zero is like, it's not great for you, but if you have one every couple days, you'll be all right. But if your rationalization is like, well, I could drink 6 of these, and technically it's like drinking, you know, carbonated water. It's like, well, if you drink 6 things that are on a scale of a 4 a day, that's a 24. I'm not talking about the TV show. I never actually watched 24. 24 was one of those shows that would come on. It would always be advertised during like middle school and stuff. Like 24 is like the big weekly show. That and Lost. It seems like Lost has been lost in time. Because I haven't heard a goddamn thing about it, but in real time, that was like the biggest fucking show you would ever thought existed. And now, the biggest show is like Succession, and HBO, melodrama, and Lost was like this dumbass, Naked and Afraid, but a written script about, I think, I don't even know what the show was about. No one knows what the show's fucking about, but it was like the biggest fucking show. Those were the days when it was like American Idol, Lost. And now we got Succession and Love Island. it's for these dumbass people really go on these shows like The Button, Love Island, and all these things. Or Love is Blind. And like, you know, I get to know someone in a week, we get engaged. What could possibly go wrong? But I don't know. I'm not trying to be a big brother. That was another terrible reality show. But you know, it's not terrible. Often Be with Clint Nelson, episode 266. Cause that's what episode number this is. Yep. I'm getting straight into the intro, but before I get into the intro, guys, I'm going to keep this one brief, but still a partner of the show. Magic Mind. Alright. You guys know the deal. Great nootropic drink. I drink it every single day. Great product. I'll have the discount link under the episode description. OffNBeat20. OffNBeat. Sound like I was doing a rap. OffNBeat20. That's my discount code. Go to the website. I'll have the discount code. The website link in the description. It'll be all below. It'll be pretty easy to follow. Help support the show. Great product. Try it out. Use my discount code to give yourself a discount just to try it out. Then if you like it, keep using the discount code, you know? Unlimited. unlimited, as Russell Wilson would say. Well, he's going to be having a unlimited amount of free time in the off season if he doesn't get it together. but yeah, Magic Mind. Go try it out, guys. But yeah, all right, guys, let's get into it. Welcome to episode 266 of the Offbeat Podcast with Clint Nelson. I'm your host, Clint Nelson. Don't forget to like, follow, comment, subscribe, hit the notification bell. Most important, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to suck some titties. Yeah. Recording this on, what is today, February 26th? February 26th on a Monday, 2024 at, yes, I know, 2:28 a.m. Eastern. In case you can't tell by my tone, might be an After Dark number 2 edition. Now, these After Dark episodes are always a little bit different tone. Because I have to be kind of quiet. Not because I have a child, like most people. But because, you know, when you're on the lower income scales, you typically are in a crowded apartment with loved ones. And a cat. So anytime you shake the treats, let's just say she'll treat you with a meh. but yeah. But it's a nice cat jam. if you put jelly on their claws, all of a sudden when they scratch you, you'll just have a sticky infection. you know how sticky it gets. Yeah, someone get a jam pole. I guess that's what you can call when you're trying to, you know, what do they call it when people forcibly have a baby? Conceive. it's always weird, you know? I've always found that thing kind of weird. Like, I understand you're trying to have a kid. But it's weird when you are participating in an act just for the intention of, we're just ready to get pregnant. Because I would assume it would feel too scientific. Which, I don't know, I think you're fucking insane if you're really just sitting there like, you know what? It's time to have a kid. that's a wild thought to have. It's the most natural human thought. But it's a wild thing to be like, you know what? You're going through the motions of, this is it. It's about to happen. And then it may or may not happen. And that's awkward. When you try to have a baby, you can't. Then you have to go through fertility. Makes you feel less of a man. And then, you know, makes her feel like, damn, the birth control hormones really fucked up who I was attracted to here. but nah, fertility is no joke. I used to let the mic smoke. as Drake would say, she used to be a man who just got through playing. Now she's with a fan who's 2K'ing. that's really what a sperm donor is, you know, the guy who donated is the guy who just got through playing, who can still, you know, produce something on the court. And now that the ball's in your court, you can't produce. Damn, look at Clint tying shit together. Well, tie her together and you will have family ties. Just, you know, it'll just look like someone else in your crib. damn, that's a lot of deep inside dark humor there. But anyways, let's plow through this. Yeah. It's been a while, and by a while, I mean for my standards. It's been like a week since I recorded. And in case you can't tell by the tone, it's a lot more restrictive. It is weird, you know. The thing is, like, when you do stuff, you know, you're free, but it's weird when, like, it's almost like when there's a person sleeping in the next room. It's almost like when you feel you're in the presence of a spirit, like a ghost. Like, the whole mood changes. You know someone is there. And you're like, there's nothing to worry about. But at the same time, just the fact that the presence is there, your tone changes, right? And I think that's why they say presence matters, right? If you're like someone who's in charge of people, management, or a leader of some sort, of anything, just your presence being there, people will act or tolerate, or they will move accordingly. If they don't respect your presence, they may fuck around a lot. If they do respect it, they may just be afraid to show up to work because they'll be afraid to work. but nah. I do think that's a real thing. That's the weird thing. It's like when you are actually a person with a presence and people feel it, people be like, oh, people respect you. And have all. It can also make people just not want to come to work if they're used to kind of not being held to a certain standard. And that's more of a real thing than people want to admit. But anyways, but yeah, it's a lot going out here. And I know I kind of touched on it earlier. But you know what's dumb? And this is a part where I don't listen to as much sports radio because I'm more on the podcasting now. But this is one of the things that used to annoy me about sports radio. And I only hear when I hear on my local 92.9 The Game. And this is where this is the part of the NFL offseason I don't like. I know I talked about a few episodes whenever this one comes out about how it feels like the NFL is like a long distance relationship, you know. There's other leagues, but it's not the same, you know. It's like, you know, there's other people in close proximity. Like, you know, there's people in relationships, it could be more convenient, but there's just something about that fling that only lasts for a few months with someone that stands out more. That's what the NFL is. Because here's what happens in the offseason. You get these dumbasses on the radio, and they're sitting there talking about Russell Wilson. Like, you know, will he be indifferent next season? Probably not. And their rationalization is, well, whoever he signs with and the amount of money he signs for will determine if he's in it for the money or if he's in it for the rings. And they're like, because if he's serious about actually winning a ring, he should sign for a veteran minimum of like $1.2 million, $2 or $3 million contract because he's already made all this money. It's like, first of all, just because you've made a lot of money doesn't mean you should just sign for the cheapest ass contract and be, because even though Russell Wilson has kind of been ass for a few years now, he's not $1 to $2 million a year ass, all right? Like, he might have to go the Baker Mayfield route where he takes like a reduced like gap year contract to prove himself. But you can't be the face of a team or a starting quarterback for a team making $2 to $3 million. Because that doesn't mean that he's more serious about ring, because chances are he's not going to sign with the team that's on the verge of a Super Bowl. Let's just be honest about it. Because typically teams are on the verge of a Super Bowl already have an established player. So it makes no fucking sense for a guy to sign for $3 million a year to prove he's about winning when they're going to go 7-9 and he improves them to 7-9 when they would be 5-11 without him. All right. So that whole notion and that whole thing is dumb. Yeah, you know what? You could take a few million less to help someone else get paid more or to create cap room. But it's so fucking dumb. And it's just some. And this is where I think going to radio school is kind of useless. Because it is just repeated rhetoric about, oh, well, if he doesn't take a pay cut, he's not serious about it. It's like, no, I'm just not going to go for making $35 million a year, the $2 million a year doing the same job. It makes no fucking sense. It really doesn't. He's not going to make $30 million next year with a new contract. Like, he'll still be getting paid from Denver. But at the same time, I'm not just going to take a $1 million contract as my standalone contract when I've proven to have and made what I've made and what I've done in this profession. Regardless of what your opinion about Russell Wilson is, he's not a top 10, 15, maybe even 20 quarterback. But even backup quarterbacks get 7, 8, 9, 10 million nowadays. So to sit here and say I'm taking $2 million to prove I give a fuck about winning while Tim Boyle's on a fucking NFL team, started four games last year. You're going to put Tim Boyle out there, but then tell me I'm not better than him or Zach Wilson. You know, so eat a dick. If I was Russell Wilson, I'd tell him, eat a dick. I'm not taking a $2 million contract to prove I give a fuck about winning. Because I've actually won in this league. I've won a Super Bowl. Regardless of what y'all feel about him. So, that shit just annoys the living shit out of me. And that used to be the thing. I used to, it was weird. Now that I think about, the first, radio used to be just audio. And then I used to be, middle school and high school. And early college, I used to love, it's part of where I got into potentially wanting to do broadcasting of some sort. Colin Cowherd, still my favorite sports radio host, really just my favorite radio host in general out there. I have a few of his books. I've read one of them, haven't read the other. And They started doing this thing on ESPN about, probably 7, 8, 10 years ago, where they simulcast it, where basically they made it a TV show, But really, at ESPN, it was just, we're just going to have the cameras in the studio and watch, it's just a visual. And that's how I watch and listen. I used to love it. Now they've made radio where it's basically a TV show. They got a whole studio, a whole setup. It's basically a TV show, a nice glamorous thing going on, and that's great. And really, I'm literally thinking this in real time. Really, that was the earliest point to say that the visual aspect of talking matters. Because that's really what blew up. These radio shows. Colin Cowherd was big, right? He was big at ESPN, but when they start simulcast, that's when it's it's introducing to a broader audience. I could watch this on TV or radio. Then when he went to Fox Sports, the whole Fox Sports has changed. It's really a TV show. The Herd with Colin Cowherd is literally a TV show. That now they just put it on, it's on iHeart, but really even on Spotify and shit, they post the show a couple hours after the show airs, and they break it down literally, they do the full show, hour one, hour two, hour three, and so it's literally a TV show that they just make into a podcast. It doesn't really matter how, and now he actually has his own podcast and network, he has his own show for podcasting. On his own network. So basically, the dude's double and triple dipping. But that was the earliest form of showing that the video audience matters a lot, right? And I was watching something with a former Your Mom's House producer talking about the state of podcasting past couple years and how it's developed and how it had a spike during, 2020 due to everything that was going on. People just wanted to consume shit, so numbers were up, 2021, all that stuff. That was the best time, hey, you could just, people consume your shit. People were just looking for something different. And, which by the way, did you know podcasters were considered essential workers, which is pretty insane. I mean, it's you can do it from home anyways. Who gives a fuck? Make them essential. And then now there's a situation where podcast listeners are starting to, They're at an all-time high, but at the same time, the number of shows that are being listened to have dipped down a lot. And there's a theory he brought up that really, the reason why the only people that are going to survive this are the big dogs and people that stick through it. Like, if you're one of the biggest in your field, it doesn't really matter. You're going to be fine. But the only way you're going to survive through this is if you have a video, YouTube, or version of your show. They're saying audio strictly, you're going to have a real hard time of getting through because of just how the algorithms work. And so, yeah. And this is my personal belief. I do think now it's more important than ever to see someone's, depending on the style they do, someone's seeing someone's visual of their mannerisms and everything talking when they're talking about subjects. Because that's really, there is essence to kind of assuming how someone talks, because there's something about when you listen to someone. Have you ever, like, listened to someone for the longest time, didn't know what they look like, and you created this idea of what this person looks like, how they talk with their hands or gestures, and then however you actually see them, you know, on TV or in a video, you're like, wow, that person looks nothing like I thought they sound like. And they don't talk with the mannerisms in any capacity I've ever thought. So sometimes that does bring more of a pill not to see someone, but I don't know, kind of going too long on that. But anyways, yeah. Yeah, but you know, there are no movies out. You know, I'll be honest. I was trying to go see a movie a few weeks ago with the lady, and when I checked to see what movies are out, I literally did not know a single, I've never heard of a single movie in passing. I've never seen an advertisement, any movies ever. I couldn't even, right now, I couldn't even tell you any of the movies that are out because they were so forgettable. It was a bunch of nothingness. And it's weird because I know I was talking about recently how movies are on an uptick again, but at the same time, maybe during this time of year, there's no movies out typically. I don't know. But when I see how uninteresting and how badly promoted, how there's nothing that even draws people to the theaters, I don't mean to sound insensitive, but it really seems like these writer strikes are not really, maybe it works out in their favor, maybe, in a way. But it doesn't seem like, it's not really a great sign. And I know they came to a deal to resolve and all this shit, and I'm all about workers' rights, but at the same time, it's like, you guys got to make some more interesting shit. I don't care about these deep, thoughtful pieces with a cool, slick title that's kind of weird. Like, you know what movie titles would always, like, when I was seeing on TV, I'm like, why the fuck would I watch something called A Man with Striped Pajamas? And then it may be some deep movie about farming, all this shit, and it may be some quirky, irreverent, and it may be a great movie, but The Man in the Striped Pajamas, why the fuck if I don't see a commercial about that movie, knowing what the fuck is about, why would I even give that movie a opportunity, right? These weird movies with these titles, and it's just like, there's, it's not interesting. And like, even seeing like the movies for the Oscars, I know Oppenheimer won a good bit, but like The Killers of a Flower Moon or something, and Leonardo DiCaprio was in there, and people are like, yeah, it was pretty eh. When Leonardo DiCaprio movies are starting to become eh, there's something wrong here. And I just kind of, And people shit on Marvel movies, but at least they're entertaining, regardless if they're flawed. And I know people don't want to hear that, but that's honestly the truth. At least it's entertaining. I think sometimes we're trying to make these movies like too like message driven, and we're leaving out entertainment. Like those, like Denzel Washington in the early mid 2000s, Keanu Reeves, yeah, but Will Smith, you know, maybe not the best example today's times, but you know, you get what I'm saying. They went through a run in the 2000s, early 2010s where it was just good, entertaining movies, even if they were flawed. Denzel went through the Reign of Fire, the John Hughes of the world. You know, Flight, that was a more recent one. But Training Day was like late 90s. But you get like Denzel Washington had like a movie every year that was just like a... It probably made decent money at the box office, some of them, but they have staying power over time where people are going to watch it. Tom Cruise went through that Mission Impossible, you know, and Jack Reacher. Like, you know, they went through runs of movies where it's just like, every time they're in a movie, you know, it, I don't know if it's going to be the greatest movie I've ever seen, but I'm not going to regret wasting 2 hours of my life seeing it. That's something you can guarantee on. There's just not really any... I mean, there's stars, but at the same time, stars aren't really the same as they used to be. There's famous actors. Like, they're trying to force actors to be more captivating on screen than they really are. Like, I couldn't... Like, they're saying, like... Timothy Chalamet is like this up and coming. Like, I'm sure he's decent. I've never seen a movie he's in personally. I just don't really watch movies that much anymore. But it doesn't really seem like he's like this Daniel Day-Lewis like revolutionary of the profession actor. But he also doesn't even seem like he's like this box office actor either. So it was like this young guy that probably is good at acting, but it's not making me go see a movie because Timothy Chalamet's in it. And I think I think the superstar actor today. Oh, I'll even think Arnold Schwarzenegger. During the 90s and 2000s. Same run. It's like Terminator. Hey, whatever he's in, people are going to watch. All right. Sylvester Stallone had a little bit of a run in the 80s and 90s outside of Rocky. So, Jean-Claude Van Damme. Nowadays, it seems like the actors are Will Ferrell in the 90s or the 2000s. So you get what I'm saying. And nowadays, it's like we're getting outsiders who the first thing they did wasn't movies. But they had a big name like The Rock. Transition to acting. He had some movies in the early mid 2000s. But it was really like the 2010s with... fucking, you know... What the fuck was The Rock in? Journey to the Center of Earth. Was he in Jumanji? Kevin Hart is a good example. The Rock. Kevin Hart. Now they're in... these movies as they're Mr. Hollywood. They're the ones making the 15 to 20 million a movie. Like the Tom Cruises, the Tom Hanks were. And near them's first first like main thing was acting. It was wrestling and comedy. And now we're trying to bring all these. The outsiders is what's box office. But the actual movies and actors are not box office, if that's weird enough, as we're saying. Now, in movies, it feels like we rely on how great the script is, how great the director is. We rely on a lot of stylization. Now we rely, honestly, what determines whether people are going to go watch a movie now is going to be who the director is. If it's a Quentin Tarantino film, it's automatically going to make money. Back in the day, it was like, oh yeah, this director's doing it. That's awesome. But who's the actors in it, right? Now, if the director's kind of eh, like, the actor better be superstar level to overshadow that. So, I don't know. But, yeah. Any woo-hoo? I love me a Snow White bunny. Because I'm the Dallas Cowboys in the White House. Yeah. You know, they say the hardest job in America is being the Dallas Cowboys quarterback. That's actually a real thing. It's the most scrutinized position. And by all means, $40 million a year, if that's scrutinized, give it to me, baby. people also just shit on Dak for no reason. The dude's legitimately a top eight quarterback at worst. It's so stupid. I know, not to go back to sports media narratives, but this is like Dak Prescott sucks. So really? Because honestly, for your team, if you had Dak Prescott, you'd be creaming your pants every fucking day. All right. Jesus fucking Christ. Dak Prescott's ass. It's like, all right, you go out there with Tommy DeVito and Daniel Jones, and how is that working out for you? How many fucking division titles have you won since Dak Prescott has been the quarterback for the Cowboys? I'm not saying the Cowboys have won every division title, but that just shows how relevant you are. Shows how relevant you are, Commanders. Oh, yeah, you keep going out there with Sam Howell and Jacoby Brissett and bitch about fucking, well, Dak Prescott's garbage. Shut the fuck up. God fucking damn it. But it seems like every comedian or everyone's just coming out with their own alcohol, right? Everyone's trying to follow this George Clooney model. Well, his wife is a model. apparently, because you know what? Alcohol, it's a pretty highly consumed beverage. You know what? It will always be bought. Now, will your alcohol be bought? Depends. But typically, you can make... Alcohol is one of those things where basically you either become a billionaire or you make nothing. Like, you either go the Conor McGregor route with Proper 12, make hundreds of millions of dollars. George Clooney, make hundreds of millions, potentially, I think, maybe billions. He's going to be making off the tequila he has. And now we got just podcasters, just comedians, just, like, putting their name behind alcohol they probably have very little influence in. Like, I honestly don't believe Bert Kreischer's and Tom Segura. It doesn't really seem like alcohol. They spent a whole lot of time in the lab going through the purity of it. I think it's the definition of just like, we're the spokespeople. This is a cash grab. Really no different than probably Logan Paul and Prime type of thing. I do think, you know, but see, like, the reason why that bothers me in some, like, well, I won't even say it bothers me, but I think the difference between something like that and, like, for example, there's a podcast I listen to, We Might Be Drunk. It's with Sam Morril and Mark Norman. It's like, they have something called the Bodega Cat Whiskey. I think, almost 9 months or a year now, it feels like they've had it for quite a bit of time. But one, it fits their show. It's literally about a show about getting drunk on a podcast. They don't always get drunk, but you know, they drink on the podcast. They have a bartender, makes drinks. They both like to drink. It's part of their image. They're comedians, which alcoholism and comedy is a whole different subject for another day. But it's like the name, it fits them. It feels like, you know, they even said, like, we went through the process. It took quite a bit of time to come up with the one we want. I think it was like the process, like a year, year and a half of them putting it together how they want to, like, going through, is it going to be this, is it a rot, you know, going into detail about it, you know. I feel like the Tom Segura, Bert Kreischer one, it probably is something that was already, like, basically made and in the works, and they're like, you know, we could really use some spokespeople for this. That's why I feel there were. I could be wrong. But it feels like because of their get down, their get down seems a lot more commercially based than like someone like We Might Be Drunk or people that at least like have a real interest in, like, you know, this would be cool to have, like, something they're proud of. And it doesn't feel like a cash grab, even if it is businessly motivated. But yeah, I don't know. One feel is, it's just an example where one feels more genuine than the other. And, yeah. But speaking of genuine, a little ESPN top head honcho drama, because this is the Daily Drama Report. So, Stephen A. Smith said, I guess in an interview, that there's things that Pat McAfee can do that he can't do because of the race of his skin. Pat McAfee doesn't have to be politically correct. He doesn't have to have a filter in how he says things because of his skin color. Stephen A. being the face of ESPN, a face of Disney, he has to have a lot more political correctness. You know, the same guy that is pretty bombastic about going on and on about shitting on Kwame Brown over and over, but it seems like that has died down a lot. And what's weird is that I get what he's saying on a general light. I think on the surface level, someone could read that, but like, yep, oh, it's because Pat McAfee's white, Stephen A's black, you know. There's a certain image that could be perceived with stuff he says and how he says it and some inherited stuff that people have, biases. And you know what? There could be a lot of truth to that. I think the thing that Stephen A. missed the mark on with that is that you use the platform of ESPN to build your brand, to build your voice. Not saying you didn't have a name outside of ESPN, because people forget Stephen A. worked for ESPN and then actually got fired. If I believe, I can't remember, it was like 08, 2011. I don't remember how far. He got fired from ESPN, then came back not too long after all that. And then that's when he was on the ascension and, you know, complete different career trajectory, blew up, became the face, all hard work, all earned, right? And the difference is he built it through ESPN. So, yes, when you build it through something, you kind of have to follow these guidelines. But when you're an outside talent that built your name, built your brand, made a lot of money outside of ESPN, literally was making, signed a $120 million deal with, what was it, FanDuel? One of these big fucking gambling companies. And they were basically the distributor for the show. They're basically what paid the show to be able to do what they do. Completely started the show from scratch on YouTube. Basically a live podcast. Then basically radio once they... But they just streamed. And then put the podcast out. And then ESPN came, and Pat McAfee, really the biggest show in sports before going to ESPN. People could argue ESPN has kind of made the show less popular, which people were scared that the show, that they were going to be different on ESPN, and it was going to be a completely different show, and some people still say it has. But they basically have a lot of the same flexibilities they did doing it without ESPN. And they got a decent amount of money, but to be honest, they didn't really get they didn't have as much money as when they were doing it with DraftKings and stuff, or FanDuel, whichever the fucking company was. But obviously, being on ESPN is about the bigger picture. You get more eyes on you, a different audience, on the biggest network in sports. National television, with the connections to ABC, Disney, and all this stuff. And so, in the long run, it still makes a lot of sense to go on ESPN. But they had to convince Pat McAfee that the incentive was in his favor. He didn't need ESPN. He was doing fine. They were making money without him. But obviously, being part of ESPN, you know, now you'll... I think the incentive for them was, man, we're doing all this shit ourselves. Where if we have ESPN, you know, have a production team to help with this, that, and the other, it will make our jobs easier and we just focus on the show. We don't have to worry about all this other shit. So I think, honestly, being with ESPN is more of a technical reason. It makes them where they just do the show a lot smoother. Probably. But he can make the argument that being with ESPN actually hinders a lot of things that he could say. But he still says it because they know that they're benefiting more from him being on there on ESPN than vice versa, per se. They both benefit. But I think that's the part that Stephen A. misses, is that how you come in and enter a situation is how... is the leverage you have. If you enter a relationship with someone where, let's just say you enter a relationship and you had nothing going for you, and they're like, hey, I'm going to bail you out. I'm going to, whatever you have, I'm going to wipe it clean. That's great. But now you're always going to be kind of at mercy of them holding that over you. We made you. Without me, you wouldn't have been this. Without me, you have never had this. Where if you come in with everything in place saying, hey, I don't need shit. There's nothing you can do for me that I can't do for myself. Sometimes better. So don't get in the way and you'll benefit in the process. That's really Pat McAfee's approach to ESPN. It's like, we're here more for you guys than you are for us. So let us do what we do, and we both benefit. Where Stephen A. now, if he left ESPN, he'd be fine. But that wasn't always the case. So, I think that's where it's kind of different. And that's where, like, the race card gets overly abused, when it's not saying that what he said doesn't have truth to it. But you used a possibly terrible example to make an example of something that there's probably better examples you could use. Because no one with the straight, because like 98% of people, regardless of what side, the fence or whatever, would look at that statement and be like, all right, like that's not really the predominant answer here. You know what I'm saying? But I realize this show is just about podcasting now. I'm talking about other podcasts and shit. But you know what? It's media. And this is a median to your media bug. Because girl, you bugging. Dick tucking. Dick sucking. Yeah, yeah. Big fucking titties in the bug bucky. Yeah, KFC finger licking good. Hey, hey. Yeah, sorry. Went on a little side tangent there. I can't remember the last time I just got a bucket of chicken, though. oh, Jesus. Maybe on my to-do list this week. But yipperoo. So. By the way, wait, I did already talk about that, but yeah. Oh my god. So, if you put a down payment on a house, Does that mean you're down with the sickness of debt? oh, you'll be disturbed by it, all right. Oh, I'll tell you what, though, man. Look, New York City is a great city from afar. It's a great city if you just want to travel. And because, like, you travel, like, you know it's going to be expensive, whatever. But in my algorithm, man, I've been watching this channel from this guy named Cash Jordan, where basically he'll randomly do tours of random people's apartments, and they'll be like, oh, yep, I paid. Well, actually, it may be a different YouTuber does that, but basically he goes on these apartment tours and be like, you can live in this $2,400 tiny ass apartment, but you have a nice view of the Empire State Building. And it's going through, he basically just goes around to like an update on the status of like what apartment hunting is like in New York City, kind of giving an update on real estate in a sense of how the New York City apartment stuff jargoning is going on, you know, and breaking it down. It's like very interesting stuff. And it's just crazy. Like, I know you're paying for the convenience where you live in, the potential of money making, all that shit. That all that's great. But like for some of these apartments, like literally I watched one earlier and it was like $6,400 a month. Like $6,400, like honestly, here's where like the renting and buying makes no sense at a certain point, right? At that point, you might as well buy something. And you've never heard me say that. Renting is something where you buy somewhere, you throw a little bit of change away for the time being to not commit to something. But once you start, in my opinion, regardless of what tax bracket you're in, once you start getting to like $2,800, $3,000 plus a month, unless it's some exquisite living and you're just making so much fucking money that really is just throwaway money. Once you get to that point, you might as well just like get a house. Because if you can afford to pay $3,000 a month for rent, you can probably afford a slightly better place for about the same. If you can pay that. And at least like feel like you're doing something important. And I just kind of, and what blows me away, and this is going to sound insensitive, right? But bear with me. And it kind of gets into this lifestyle entitlement thing that I believe. And I'm not someone to, the prices are insane in New York City. And what's crazy to me is people in New York City talking about how it's unaffordable housing. It's unaffordable to live here. And it's pretty simple. If it's unaffordable, then don't live there. And that's going to sound very insensitive, but it is not, like, it's no secret what's going on there in New York City. If you can't afford it, move an hour or two away, live somewhere else. You can't afford it. And look, I am not pro just getting fucked in the ass with prices, because it does suck. Rent's way too high in most places. But you can't just continuously live somewhere and expect that things are just going to become more affordable. You either got to increase where you live, increase your income from where you live, or move to where you can afford to live. Is it bullshit what's happening and what's going on? Yeah. But it's not going to really change. And I think people feel entitled, like we live somewhere we should just live for free just because I just because that's where I am. It's like, no, like, you're living outside of your means. And you're complaining like, oh, I have to spend 40% of my income. It's like, yes. You make an inflated income because of where you live. It's no different than if you were to live in Ohio and you're making $4,000 a month, but rent is what? $1,500, $1,600 a month? You're paying about 40%. And ideally, it's supposed to be like you shouldn't be spending more than 30%, but most people are actually close to spending 50%. That's really what the numbers show. So, yeah, you're paying, you're making $6,500, but you're paying $2,900 a month for rent. That's before anything else. But you also, granted, you don't have car expenses in most cases, but transportation from taxis and shit like that. And New York City just find a way to just get fucking money out of you. Now they have it where if you enter Manhattan, I believe, if you're like in a taxi, it's like $1.25. If it's an Uber, it's an extra $2. If you drive your car through there, it's an extra whatever. Basically, driving through, you got to pay a fare just to drive through Manhattan. And it's like, because I guess that's where the money's at. And we got to preserve the smog for this and all this shit. And you got to accurately report how many miles you've driven through there and stuff. And it's like, what are we doing here? Like, you got to pay X amount per mile to drive in a city. Like, how fucking, you know, pay tolls and toll fares are one of the dumbest things ever. It's fucking a public road. These are public roads that we are just cool with the government, and these government officials would be like, yeah, look, we know you paid $85 to fill up your car just to last for a week. I know you pay $700 a month on your car payment. I know you pay actually $250 on insurance. But, you know, we need to make sure the smog is on the down low, you know. It's insane, man. These motherfuckers have the audacity to tell you, pay to drive through this public place. But yeah, my camera's about to die. That was episode 266 of the Offbeat Podcast with Clint Nelson. I'm your host, Clint Nelson. Don't forget to like, follow, comment, subscribe, hit the notification bell. Most important, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to suck some titties. God, this camera's dying faster by the day. What the fuck? Alright guys, have a great day, night, morning, and everything in between. Them chicken thighs.